We may now turn for a little to the psalm that we read from, Psalm 44. We may read just now from verse 24. Psalm 44, reading from verse 24. Sorry, verse 23, I should have said. Awake, why sleepest thou, O Lord? Arise, cast us not off forever. Wherefore hidest thou thy face, and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? For our soul is bowed down to the dust, our belly cleaveth unto the earth. Arise for our help, and redeem us for thy mercy's sake. And it is, in considering this psalm, it is the words at the very end, the last verse, that we would desire to keep in mind as we consider the more general content of the psalm. This is a prayer, arise for our help and redeem us for thy mercy's sake. As we said on another occasion, the book of Psalms consists of five books or five collections of psalms. And one of the things that I've become aware of, I've even heard a minister saying that David wrote all the psalms. Well, of course, David did not write all the psalms. And the psalms were written at various times throughout the history of the church. You have psalms that were written not at David's time, but very far beyond it. You have, for example, the captives of Judah, and they're in bondage in Babylon, and they say, "We hanged our harps upon the willows. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land?" This was not at the time of David, but well beyond it. You have also the captives when they're released, and they say, "We were like men that dreamed when we were delivered." And what we have to understand is that these psalms were never written as a book of psalms or as a book of praise. People sometimes forget that. They were written as individual compositions at different periods, at different times in the history of the church. And they were written for particular reasons. If it was the psalmist David, or if it was Asaph, or even we have won the song of Moses, they were written because of a particular event, because of a particular experience that an individual or the church more generally was experiencing. And therefore, when we go through the Psalms, we get all the varied experiences of the individual believer. But we also find the experiences of the church more generally, and I believe that that's what we have here in this Psalm 44. And when we come to the words in verse 26, arise for our help. This was the cry of the church at some point. We're not told when, but we do know that these who are uttering these words before God, they obviously have a real sense of need. And they are asking God to arise because they need him. They need his help. Arise for our help and redeem us for thy mercy's sake. They could think of no better reason, no better argument to present to God as to why he should help them. They didn't say they were worthy or they deserved it. For thy mercy's sake, arise and help us and redeem us. And you and I, when we look at the state of the professing church tonight, surely we must think, well, this is a most appropriate prayer for ourselves in our situation and in our generation. And as we look at the psalm, keeping these words that I believe are an appropriate prayer and petition for ourselves, it is considered to be so because it is the prayer of the people of God. In this psalm, it's very obvious that there is a relationship that exists between God and these people who are praying to him. Earlier on in the psalm, you see there how that they are boasting, the people of God, verse 8, in God, we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. And then you'll see there's a break here so that what has already been uttered may be considered before moving on. And you will see in the psalm that in verse 4 again, thou art my king, O God, command deliverances for Jacob through thee, will we push down our enemies, and so on. So there is a very definite relationship existing here between these people and God. And automatically then, they turn to him for help. They do believe that God will help them. They come by faith. You will see from verse 23, the cry is, awake, why sleepest thou? Now, you and I know from another psalm that God does not sleep. He neither slumbers nor sleeps. He that keeps Israel, he slumbers not. And why then, we may ask, are these people saying, awake, why sleepest thou? You have to understand that the Psalms, like a lot of Hebrew, is written very poetically, and that has to be taken into consideration. It's as though they are crying for help because God seems to be inactive. When we're asleep, we're inactive. And that's what the psalmist has in mind here. Why is it that God isn't acting? Doesn't he know the circumstances? Doesn't he know what's happening to his people? Why does he not act? O awake, why sleepest thou, O Lord? Arise, cast us not off forever. And then again, verse 24, wherefore hidest thou thy face and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? That sounds very like the language of Job. God had not forgotten Job at all, but he thought he had. And here's the church asking the question, why hidest thou thy face? Now, you have to understand that the face, when it was turned away, was an evidence of displeasure. When the face was turned toward one, it was evidence of friendship, of acceptance. And here the feeling is, well, God has turned away. He's withholding his pleasure. He's hiding himself. They don't deny the existence of God, these people. Why hidest thou? God is there. God is real. But he's hiding himself. And sometimes we can be tempted, and the devil will come along and tempt his people to believe, oh well, God doesn't exist. Or if he does, he's not interested in you because he's not doing anything. These people have a real relationship with God, an experiential relationship with God. And they know that God is there, even when he's hiding himself. Sometimes the people of God find that hard to accept. But God sometimes to try his people, to test their faith and confidence in him. He will hide himself. He hides behind the clouds of difficulty. He hides behind the clouds of affliction and oppression. He is there, and the people of God know he is there, yet they would desire to see him, and they would desire that he wouldn't hide, but that he would be near to them. But going back to the earlier part of the psalm, you will see that this people that are praying to God, they're asking, arise for our help. They're praying this way because they are a well-informed people. They have a relationship with God, and God, they believe, is a relationship with them, and it's a very precious relationship. But going back to the first part of the psalm, what do we read there? Verse 1. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us. Not only do these people have a sound relationship with God, but they have a sound relationship with the past, a sound relationship between themselves and their fathers. Our fathers have told us. They have informed us. They have told us. They have taught us. We are conscious of what God can do. We're conscious of who God is and what he does, because our fathers have told us what God did in their days. We in the new generation, we have listened as they have conveyed to us and communicated to us what God did for them and how very, very important that is. Children growing up in the church should be able to look up to those who are older and hear from them of God's dealings with them, so the Bible becomes real to them. They just don't read a book of print recording historical events, but they see that Bible coming alive in the lives of those who are speaking to them and communicating, and they can say, yes, in my experience, I proved the Bible to be true. In my experience, I know that God is real because this is what he did for me, or this is what he did for us. And the younger generation growing up in any congregation, including this one, should be able to hear those who've been around, those who've been here years before them, speaking of how reliable the Bible is, because they have seen God at work. They have experienced God at work. This is what the psalmist says. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us. That's a very great commendation, because the address is to God and telling God, our fathers have been faithful. Our fathers have been true to us. They have told us. They have been good communicators of the truth to us. What work thou didst in their days and in times of old. They've told us what God did in their generation. And then they have told us what God did in days of old. Now you will see immediately the importance of church history. because that's what we're talking about. We have heard, our fathers have told us, what did God did in old times. And that is one of the sad things about many in this generation. They don't want to know anything of God's dealings in the past because they're even questioned. We don't want to hear about the Reformation. It was so divisive. We don't want to hear about the Puritans because they were extreme. We don't want to hear about the apostles because the church was in its infancy. We don't want to know of what God's supposed to have done. This was the great encouragement they are able to say, arise for our help, because our fathers have told us what God has done, and we want him to do it again. And you will see also how they go into detail how thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantest them, how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out, for they got not the land in possession by their own sword. And you will see because of this, then, what do we read? Verse 6, for I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. Why is this? Because in the past, our fathers, they discovered the weapons of their warfare were not carnal, but they were mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. And the God that they served is the God we're going to serve. And we will use the same weapons as they used. And we will put our confidence in God, not in our bows, not in our swords, but in God who did these great things in past generations. And the prayer is therefore very simple. It's just calling on God, do again what you have done in the past. Do it again for us. Now when you look around today, you take up some of the records of the mighty movements of God in reviving, in reforming, in quickening, when multitudes were swept into the kingdom, when men and women, boys and girls, in playgrounds at school, are going into corners to weep over their sins and cry to God for mercy, when farmers were pleading in the fields for mercy, when people couldn't work because the burden of their sins was so heavy and they were concerned about one thing, to get right with God. Now we read of these things and they have happened in the past. And you think of the thousands at certain points in history that were swept in to the kingdom of God. I was brought up in the country, but in the villages, all the villages around where I lived. And they happened to be really huge populations. But there would always be First Sinfield, Second Sinfield Presbyterian Church. First Balnange Presbyterian Church, Second Balnange, and then just another in the same vicinity, it would have a different name, maybe three. And why were they there? Because of the mighty movement of the Spirit of God when the people couldn't get into the church anymore and they had to build a new one. And then when that was packed, they had to build another one. Now, the young need to know that this is what God did. It isn't sufficient just to turn the pages of the Bible and say, well, this is what God did in the days of Moses. This is what God did in the days of Isaiah or some of the prophets. Or this is what God did in the days of the apostles like Peter and Paul. This is what God has really done for his people. And indeed, I believe that fathers should be aware of these things and should read up on them and should not only pray that it would be such things would be repeated, but that their children would indeed have that confidence in God to do the same mighty works again. Here were these people, and they were encouraged because of what they knew God had done, to plead with them to do it again. And as I said on Friday evening past, we really do need to be praying for God to reform and revive the church. And it isn't enough to sit back and say, well, we're better than others. The Free Presbyterian Church of Scotland needs reviving as much as anyone else. And this is what has happened in the past when men and women have taken God seriously, and when they have with expectation gone to God and pled with him, do it again as has been done in the past. That's what was happening here. But you will see that these people not only are well informed, but they are conscious of real need. And they are so convinced of their need that they are pleading with God to arise, but you will see what concerns them in verse 19. We read, they are saying, though thou hast sore broken us in the place of dragons and covered us with the shadow of death. They are feeling sore afflicted. They are feeling broken, and they are wondering why. You see what they are saying in verse 24. Wherefore hidest thou thy face? They want to know, why is it that God is hiding from them? And yet you see what they're testifying to. Verse 17, all this has come upon us. Yet have we not forgotten thee, neither have we dealt falsely in thy covenant. Our heart has not turned back, neither have our steps declined from thy way. We haven't apostatized. We haven't sold the truth. We haven't betrayed the truth. And yet, thou hast sore broken us, and in the place of dragons, and covered us with the shadow of death. And this is puzzling. Why is it, if we're endeavoring to be faithful to our God, is this happening to us? And this often puzzles the people of God. And you go back in the Psalm to verse 9. Look at the list of things that are referred to that these people believe God is actually responsible for. In verse 9, to get the connection, verse 7, thou hast saved us from our enemies, thou hast put them to shame that hated us. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. But thou hast cast off and put us to shame and goest not forth with our enemies. Look at verse 10 then. Thou makest us to turn back from the enemy, and they which hate us spoil for themselves. Here's what they're saying. God has done this. Why is he doing this? We're not trusting in our bow or our swords. We're trusting in God. And why is he doing this? Verse 11. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen. Why? Verse 12, thou sellest thy people for naught, and dost not increase thy wealth by their price. Why is God doing this to us? Then verse 13 again, thou makest us a reproach to our neighbors, a scorn and a derision to them that round about us. You see the list of things. Thou hast done all this. Verse 14, thou makest us a byword among the heathen, a shaking of the head among the people. Why is God doing all this? And yet, even though this is so, and the psalmist says, verse 15, my confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me. I am embarrassed. I blush with shame. Why? Because I'm boasting in God all the day long. And I boast before God's enemies all day long. And they are testifying and they are witnessing. He's trusting in God, and look what God is doing. He's trusting in God, and look at the way that things are turning out. Who would want to trust in his God? Who would have any confidence in his God? That's the psalmist is saying, I'm embarrassed by it all. But he says, verse 16, the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth by reason of the enemy and the avenger. All this is come upon us. This hasn't come upon the heathen. This has come upon God's people. This has come upon us. What are we to make of it? And I believe that if the Lord's people are truly exercised, they always inquire, they're constantly inquiring. When they feel an awareness that God is dealing with them, they're asking why. Because they want to have reason to praise God continually. What is the psalmist saying? In God we boast all the day. And the heathen and the enemies are asking, well, what kind of a fool boasts in a God that treats him like this? What kind of a people boast in God who makes things so difficult for them, who afflicts them so much, who makes them so embarrassed and so ashamed? But what does the church say? All this has come upon us, yes. Yet have we not forgotten thee, neither have we dealt falsely in thy covenant. You remember what Job said. And Job passed through a lot. But what was he saying? Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And that's the real church. Those are the real people of God. They have such confidence in God that even when they don't understand God's workings with them, they still trust him. Even though there are things that are just beyond their comprehension and their experience, they still trust God. All this has come upon us. And therefore we're going to abandon God. We're going to forsake him. We're not going to trust him anymore. Nothing like that. Yet have we not forgotten thee? And of course in the context, this is part of the argument. Why is this happening when We don't believe we've forgotten God. We don't believe we've rebelled against God. We've put our trust in Him. We've praised Him day by day. And in verse 18, we read, our heart is not turned back, neither have our steps declined from thy way. We have sought to walk in thy truth. We do not believe we've apostatized or we've gone astray from thee. But then here's the real mark of grace. Here is the evidence of genuine spirituality. Verse 20. If we have forgotten the name of God, our God, or stretched out our hands to a strange God, we don't believe we have. We certainly didn't intend to. And we don't believe upon examining ourselves that we have. But if we have in ignorance, if we have unawarely, if we have forgotten the name of our God or stretched out our hands to a strange God, shall not God search this out? For he knoweth the secrets of the heart. You see the disposition and the attitude of the Lord's people here. They're not prepared to just content themselves, lest they be deceived. The heart is deceitful above all things, and it is desperately wicked. And here are these people, and they're saying, well, we haven't forsaken the Lord. We haven't turned away from Him. We haven't rebelled against Him. But God searches the heart. And perhaps He knows things that we've forgotten or things that we're unaware of. Perhaps all our outward conformity and our external obedience might be hiding something that God knows about. Maybe He's afflicting us because of some secret sin that we're hiding or we're covering up or we're trying to deny. That's, you see, what here these people are thinking. This is how they're approaching God. Shall not God search this out? And God does. God searches out hidden sin, and God searches out secret sin. And everything outwardly may look good. Everything outwardly on the surface of things may appear normal. And that's what the church is concerned about. Why? Why is this? Wherefore hidest thou thy face? Is it because we're being hypocritical? Is it because we're being deceived? Is it because we're not being truthful, we're not being honest with ourselves or with God? And you see in the history of the church again and again that this is what God does. He sends afflictions, He sends trials, and He sends troubles to His church to bring His people to sober up and become serious and begin to inquire as to their true relationship with Himself, and to ask the question, why is God not arising? Why is God hiding His face? Why is God not working? Sometimes we wouldn't want the answers, you see. We wouldn't dare to pray that way, and we wouldn't dare to ask questions like that to God, because it might expose things to us. God might expose things to His people, to the church. Yes, you're consistent here, but you're not consistent there. Yes, you're spiritually minded in this area, but you're completely worldly minded in that area. And that's, you see, what these people are coming before God with, this humble attitude. Wherefore hidest thou thy face? Is God hiding his face at the present time to his people in the professing church? Is this why we're spiritually in the low state we're in? Because God is hiding his face in order to show his displeasure. And we might be wondering to ourselves, when are our prayers going to be answered? When will God revive his work? When will God arise and bring his people to their senses? And when will they become spiritually minded and forsake the pleasures that they're pursuing, that are taking them away from God and away from his truth? And you can see how the church on this occasion is really feeling, wherefore hidest thou thy face and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? These are expressions of feelings. This is how we feel. Our soul is bowed down to the dust. Our belly cleaveth unto the earth. We are truly brought low. We hang our heads in shame. We've been boasting in God all the day long, and yet we are sorely afflicted, we are broken, and we are oppressed. Why is it? Awake, why sleepest thou, O God? Arise, cast us not off forever. Twice that petition, what a mighty power there is just in one word. We don't need really long, convoluted prayers to impress God. These are prayers of determination, prayers of faith, prayers of seriousness. Arise. Arise. One word. But what is behind it? One word, arise. Because this people know if God would arise, it would change everything. Just one word, arise. And if God would arise, what a difference it would make. And then when we come to the end of the psalm, arise for our help. What power, what faith there is in these words. And if you and I could learn to pray like that, and if we would become as earnest as the church is depicted here as being, what might God not do? Open the windows of heaven and pour us out a blessing that there would not be room enough to receive it. But perhaps the problem in the church in our day is we're not bowed down enough. We don't feel we're broken. We don't feel oppressed, because our relationship with God perhaps is not as it really ought to be. Maybe we're too content. Maybe we're too complacent, too satisfied, and not sufficiently aware of our own low state in this day and generation. But may God put this prayer, really put it in our hearts. Arise for our help and redeem us. And what an argument, for thy mercy's sake. For thy mercy's sake. because God delights in mercy. We shall leave it there. May God bless his word to us.